Welcome back to the Group Answers Podcast with Chris Surratt. I'm Brian Daniel. This is episode 50. And Chris, here we are in the new state-of-the-art facility here at One Lifeway Plaza. What do you think?
This is amazing. In fact, you said it's episode 50, but I really feel like it's episode 1.
Yep.
Because it's a new day. It's a new, name. Group Answers is a brand new name for the podcast. And we're sitting in, this is high tech. I mean, we actually can spread out a little bit. It's nice.
Yeah, the showers are a little small, and I wish the treadmills were farther away because I think they bother the sound quality a little bit.
Yeah, the buffet could be better too.
and the service, to be honest. But why complain? Third world problems, right?
And we have a new producer, Justin, who brought us waters. Our old producer, Drew, never brought us waters. So I just feel like I feel reborn.
It's a whole new day. And we have with us our esteemed co-host, I guess you could say, or our guest today, David Francis. You want to talk about David?
David Francis, the esteemed David Francis. David is or was the director of Sunday School, but he is retiring in February, and so excited for David. But David has been at Lifeway. How long have you been here now, David?
20 years, 6 months, 3 days, 5 hours. I don't know.
You're counting.
But who's counting, right?
About 20 and a half years. Long enough to be confused by these new doors. I thought I had gotten locked out of the concentration room I was using earlier to work in, and because the sliding door would neither push in nor pull out until I realized it wasn't locked at all, but it just slid. And so
that is kind of the way right now at the new Lifeway building. We have elevators that don't have buttons. And so the first day that I came in, I got on an elevator and turned around to press a button and realized there were no buttons and thought I was going to be there for life. It's a little scary. High tech.
Just don't hit that one R. It goes to a mysterious place.
Yeah. I've wondered about that. But David is here. And David, you've been on the podcast a couple of times, but we're excited that you're in the room. And he's a prolific author. He has authored somewhere around 11 books that you can get, most of them for free, on lifeway.com/. Is it the full name, David Francis?
It is.
All right. So lifeway.com/. David Francis, and I'm excited to have David in the room, especially because of the topic today. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk a little bit about on-campus groups versus off-campus groups. And that may be a little strong to say versus, because I don't know that they're battling it out, but I think that is a topic that a lot of churches are looking at. I was sitting in a room yesterday with a church that's debating. They have on-campus groups and off-campus groups, and they're really debating, should they continue with their on-campus groups, or should they move completely off-campus? So I think that's a question that a lot of church leaders are asking. And David, I want to get your opinion, because you've been in what was probably called the Sunday school world, and a few years ago, it wouldn't have been on-campus groups versus off-campus groups. It would have been Sunday school versus small groups. In fact, you did a video and a webinar at Lifeway several years ago with that name, Sunday school versus small groups, and you guys put on boxing gloves and you were in a ring and you were going to battle it out. So I want to get your opinion right at the top. Do you feel like the argument has changed, the discussion has changed, or is it just new terminology?
In some ways it's changed, some ways it's not. Sunday school and small groups, I don't think, are at odds with one another. In fact, the church, like the one you mentioned, is primarily wrestling whether to use the word or whether to use the word and. We're going to have Sunday school and small groups, or Sunday school or small groups, and making a decision between those two things. Back several years ago, the two things were mostly defined by occasion and location. Sunday school, so-called Sunday school, almost always was defined by when it happened, before or after the primary weekend worship experience. So that was the occasion. Small groups were almost always defined, almost exclusively, by where they met, the location of the meeting. I think that's gotten a little jumbled up.
I agree, because a lot of the differences, and we talked about this in previous podcasts, but the differences between off-campus and on-campus, you can mitigate a lot of times. You can do it on-campus and have community. You can do it off campus and have Bible study. So I don't know that it matters as much where it is or even when it is.
Yeah, I think it's a helpful continuum to put on the end of a line, to put content on one end, biblical community on the other end, and try to plot where your group is, whether it's a small group meeting off campus or a Sunday school Bible study class meeting on campus. Where does it fit in terms of the balance between community and content? And Sunday school, typically as it's practiced in most churches, probably leans a little heavier toward the content side, and small groups that meet are groups that meet away from campus, mostly because they can spend longer time. That's one of the advantages. Probably lean more toward the community piece. I think both aspire to make it kind of balance in between someplace. But you know, where it sits on the continuum, left or right of center, probably defines on campus and off campus as much as anything else does.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the biggest changes in the small group world over the last several years is the fact, you know, it used to be community, that's why you want to do off campus, and the buzzword has now become discipleship. And so we want to figure out, how do we do discipleship along with community, and how does that work off campus? What have you seen? What's the biggest change in the last 10 years when it comes to on campus groups?
The biggest change probably is they want to be smaller as they perceive the off-campus groups to be, and a little bit more, a little less lecture, teacher standing behind a lectern and telling the group what he or she learned the previous week, and more toward an experiential, let's discuss together the scripture that we've studied with the help of a guide more than of a lecturer or teacher. And I think that's the influence of the small group or off-campus movement on the on-campus practice of Bible study groups.
So it's less lined up in rows and more in circles. Do you see that?
Yeah, and then I get disappointed places where I've been and taught that, and go back a year later, and there is a class that's got four people in it that are lined up in a row with a lectern in front of it, and I get really frustrated about those kind of things, because I think small is better. I think people do learn more when there's a smaller number of people. It's just good group dynamics.
That's good. I want to dive into this topic a little bit and to kind of use this as a guide. And I want to fight this out. So I'm gonna hopefully disagree with David on several points, because I brought my gloves and I'm ready to fight this out.
Okay.
But we've traveled and talked about this before, so we agree with a lot of things. But I wrote an article recently for Facts and Trends called On Campus versus Off Campus Groups. And so I went through and kind of made the case for both. And so I want to walk through this and see what you agree with, David, and see okay. what you disagree with, and maybe how churches can use this. But let's set up the cases. So the first part is a case for on-campus groups, because I've talked about before that I believe there are situations and there are churches where it makes sense to do on-campus groups. And so I do believe that they can work. And the first reason that I put on that is that they're easier to join, that it's, you know, easier to show up on a Sunday and go to a group that is meeting on campus. And in your experience, David, are most on-campus groups open? Is that the way it works?
I think theoretically they are. In practice, they probably are less open than their leaders hope they would be, and that they're even the leaders of the group perceive them to be. They are designed to be open. There's a correlation between how old they are. So new smaller groups tend to be more open than long-standing existing groups that have really deep community. And so, but they are supposed to be open, and they are easy to join. Especially my favorite schedule on a Sunday morning is for worship to happen first, so that at the end of the worship service, you can say, "Hey, folks, you know, we stick around for Bible study groups, and you can find out about one out in the foyer, and you can stay today. Don't worry about your kids; they're covered both hours." Those kind of things, you know. And so, that is easier than there's several that meet different places around the city, and go figure out where you where one is near you there that you'd like to get to or whatever.
Chris, David, my question would be, which one would you guys think would be the less open? Because I can see, I can make a case both ways. You walk on, especially in terms of someone who's visiting for the first time, walking into a classroom with people that, by all appearances, it looks like they've been doing this thing for a long time, or walking into a house with a group of people where it looks like they've been together and doing this thing for a long time.
You know, I was amused by one of our friends, Eddie Mosley, who several people, friends of this podcast, would know. Eddie was talking about the very first off-campus group he started at his church. And there were two couples that wanted to join his group, but he thought he would run it by the existing group just to make sure it was okay with them. And it wasn't okay with them. And here was the small group pastor of the church trying to convince his group to be open enough to accept two new people into the group. Ryan, I think you're right. You know,
I'm experiencing kind of my first church with on-campus groups. I grew up in a traditional church with Sunday school, but it really just kind of ended, you know, when you were 18, and then we didn't have anything after that. So I'm working with a church now that has on campus, and that was my perception coming into it before I saw it in action. It would be really easy to just jump into one, that you would go in and it's just, you know, that's the easiest way. But I am seeing that it's not, that if you walk up to a room and the doors close and there's a group of people in there and it looks like they've been there for, you know, months or years or decades, that walking in and just sitting down is not easy to do.
It's not. And in fact, just recently in a couple of churches, you can tell, as I've espoused the value of starting new small groups, that there are those that existing leaders that are saying, like, well, what about us? And so I've begun to challenge them to, for a period of 3 or 6 months, to pretend that they're new. Because if you pretend that you're a new group, you'll do things differently to welcome people than you would otherwise. That might even work for off-campus groups, to pretend you're new for a little while.
Now, regarding the invitation to someone that may be unchurched or, you know, not currently, well, just call it unchurched, I do think that it's easier to invite that person to a living room than to on campus, or I think that could be more true than not.
I do think that it's easier to be missional with your invitations with an off-campus group. If you're going to invite a friend who's never been to church or hasn't been to church in years, I would be more likely to invite them over for dinner with my small group than I would on a Sunday morning. Do you agree with that, David?
Well, I do and I don't. And we just got back from Los Angeles. That's where one of our sons lives. And on their street, there's only enough parking. Same for our kids who live in Boston. There's no excess parking. I don't know where small groups meet when they come in. There's no parking garages in the neighborhood. You've got to have a special sticker to park your car on the street. So I don't think that it's universally easier to invite somebody to come to a house than to a place that has a parking lot.
That's a good point. I live at basically downtown Nashville, and it's very hard to come to my small group.
Yeah.
You might have to walk like several blocks. So you have a point there. But I do think that if it is a neighbor, it's more, you know, it's easier to invite them over to your house than it may be to the church. But kind of,
well, certainly, I think that's true.
Overall, I think we can agree that especially if it's a new group at a church, that it's easier to kind of just jump into it than go to somebody's home.
Especially with a personal invitation. A personal invitation can happen at church too for on-campus groups. In fact, I've talked to people and I've witnessed people doing this personally, just challenge them to be RoboCop in the worship service and look around for people who are new that look like they'd be candidates for your group and go up to them during sometime, whether there's a welcome time formally or a time after the service, and ask them if they're part of a small group and invite them to come to yours. If the schedule allows it, you could invite them to come right now.
So Chris, in the context of making your location work for you, right? Mm-hmm. In the article, which is really good, by the way, unsurprisingly, in a case for on-campus groups, you cite four. Easier to join, which we just talked about, built-in childcare, which I think is huge, more consistency, which you can elaborate on that, and easier training. Which one of those is possibly the strongest case for on-campus, in your opinion?
In my opinion, I actually think it's childcare, which seems superficial until you have a kid and you need to figure out how to handle childcare for a small group experience. The first question that I get almost every time when I do a training, and David's done them with me, is how do you handle childcare? Because people will list that as the number one barrier. If you're doing a family group or a co-ed group that involve children, it's very difficult to find childcare and to figure out how do you handle them in your house. You have to have a large house or another room, or you have to pay for childcare and figure that out. And so that is a huge barrier. In fact, in the conversation with the church I was having yesterday, one of the sticky points to go completely off campus is, what do we do about childcare? So I would say, even though it seems like a small issue, it is not. Childcare is huge. What do you think, David?
I think that is absolutely the biggest differentiator in terms of just the logistics of the two types of groups is not only child care, but meaningful discipleship oriented childhood education, not just, you know, not just a teenager. Now, I don't want to oversimplify this for off campus groups, but when I'm in an on campus group, in most churches, I can pretty much depend on the fact that trained teachers using some type of biblical curriculum or guiding my my children in an age-appropriate study of the Scripture at the same time I'm doing it. I like to say that one of the advantages of the on-campus group is that you can accomplish the first two steps of your disciple-making process in your church with every member of the family on one trip to the church. And that's a huge advantage, but you just have to do it in this church.
Okay, when I was reading the article, I don't guess I would dispute that. I wouldn't go so far as that. But David, you can see I wrote huge by childcare, so not disagreeing. But I actually wrote number one by consistency. And the way I read that, and Chris, I think your explanation was a little different than the way that I might have understood it. But this idea that you're going to meet every Sunday, and it doesn't matter who's on vacation or what they're doing, and if the facilitator or leader is gone, then there's a substitute. I don't know that that's always true for on-campus groups. So that consistency is really strong for the on-campus, for the case for the on-campus groups. You're going to meet every Sunday morning, and I know there's some churches change and stuff, but more often than not, the same time every Sunday, and you get this package deal, which would include childcare.
I might use the word more predictable rather than more consistent, just in that in my experience, Sunday is the, although we meet every Sunday, only about half the people come, on any given Sunday. And it's my view, actually, that a Tuesday night group that meets close to every Tuesday may surprisingly get just as much consistency as the group that meets on Sunday, because people don't tend to travel on Tuesday night.
And I think with consistency, I did hit on the every week, but I think for me it's more what scares a lot of pastors about having off-campus groups is they can't control them as closely, or they can't monitor, are they doing the study? You know, is it going off the deep end theologically? With on-campus, I think you can have a little bit more control of that, because as a pastor, as a group's pastor or discipleship pastor, I can drop into a classroom at any point. You know, I can wander the halls and kind of go in and get a feel for how the groups are functioning. So I think that you can have better control. I don't know that that's a better thing necessarily, or an argument against off campus, but I think that you can be more consistent in the quality of groups. Would you agree with that?
I think that's probably true.
Okay.
What do you guys think is missing from the on-campus group equation? Just as you travel and as you talk to people, I don't know if I would phrase this as the place where you could improve the most, or something, a missing element. David, you referenced community, but I think there's been a move in recent years to try and rectify that maybe missing element. What are you seeing in that regard?
I just finished the third of a series of books that have a subtitle. I won't tell you what the titles are, but the subtitles are Creating Commissioned Community, Creating Caring Community, and then the first one in the series, Creating Conversational Community. That's what I wish for, hope for, long for on-campus groups to discover is the power of conversational community, a conversation that leads to helping each other understand what God is saying to us in His Word, and helping each other obey it is something that is sorely lacking in the class where people are sitting in rows of chairs and listening to someone else speak. And that's the number one thing that if I had more time on the planet to that's what I would like to influence the most.
That's good. Well, now that we've kind of talked about on campus, I want to make the case a little bit for off campus. And some of this is opposite of what on campus is, but some of the points that I made for an on campus group or an off campus group, sorry, the first one is it's easier to scale. And that's the issue that the church that I'm working with right now is hitting, is they're out of rooms. They're out of space. In fact, they do a Wednesday night where people go in the auditorium and actually circle chairs in the auditorium because they don't have rooms to spare for groups to meet in. And what they're finding is if they want to start a new group, people are saying, okay, I'll do it, but I want to do it on Sunday morning at 11 o'clock in a room at the church. And there's just not, you know, there's only so many rooms for them to use. Whereas if you're going off campus, obviously you can do groups anywhere that you want to, in homes and clubhouses, you know, in restaurants, wherever you can find a space for, you know, 12 to 16 people to meet, you can have a small group. So it can scale. There's no endpoint for it, where if you're doing them all on campus, at some point you just run out of room. So David, with that kind of limitation, what are some ways that churches have worked around that or with it to still make Sunday school grow when you're limited by space?
If you have a culture that demands that you have four walls surrounding your group, it's very difficult. If you can imagine that there's some large space maybe that can have at least three, you never want to put two groups in one room because they will drive each other crazy. But if you put three or more, they'll create their own white noise and it'll be okay. But if people can fathom that you could have a conversational community sitting in chairs in a circle in the worship center or in the gym or in some other large room, you can extend the amount of time. Another way is to have multiple schedules where you use the building more than once, and you won't actually get twice as much space, but you'll get 50-60% more that you can use. And so you can be creative about those things. Use if you happen to be near a school or near a shopping center or near a child care center or or funeral home that you can that you could use. You can find spaces within walking distance. At some point, you probably have to say, I wonder if some of our people, if they would experience an off campus group, might like it so much that they would go that direction.
What about every other week, a Sunday school? This came up in a conversation the other day, an idea. Could an on-campus group meet every other week? And so that frees up that other week for another group to meet. Have you seen that? Is that possible?
I have never seen that, and I assume it's possible. It's one of those ideas I would like for someone to try before I endorsed it. And if you're talking about every other week, like we're going to share a room and go every other week, I think it has all the disadvantages that that you point out so eloquently in your book, that every other week, if you miss, becomes once a month. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's often enough.
Another point for a case for an off-campus group is that there's more transparency. And I said, because off-campus groups are not restrained by hard time limits, there's more time for members to share their lives with each other. And so that goes to that conversational community that you're talking about, but you can extend it. You know, it doesn't have to end at 10 o'clock because the third grade class that meets during the next service needs that room. But I suppose you could probably move that on-campus conversation outside of that room. That probably works better if you're not going to the service, which you talked about, going to the service, and then to your on-campus group after the service. If you do it the flip way, if you do it that way, then you can maybe move to a restaurant or move off-campus. Have you seen that work with an on-campus group?
Yeah, you can. Let me, since we're going to have a debate, let me... debate that other part about the transparency. I think the transparency works in an off-campus group to the degree that people are transparent enough to say, hey, we agreed, we made a covenant with each other that we were going to go 90 minutes or 2 hours, and we've been doing this 2.5 hours. And out of transparency, I need to tell you that my third grader doesn't need to be picked up. My third grader needs to go home and go to bed. And so, you know, the fact that a group can operate without constraints on time doesn't mean it's the wisest thing to do. So sometimes it might be an advantage that it's a, especially you got a substitute teacher who's bored you to tears, that, oh, this class is going to end at 10 minutes until 12.
You got to just be grateful for endings. Things that end.
There's an upside to things. I know when this is going to end.
Things that predictably end, you know.
I can do anything if you'll just tell me how much longer it's going to be.
Yeah, and that's a wisdom. That's the wisdom of a covenant, and that may be the most important thing to create a covenant around. If you're an off-campus group in particular, is to say how long is it? What time are we going to start, and what time are we going to quit?
And the same rules apply, right? So like if it's the covenantal end time, then you say, hey, it's 9 o'clock at night or whatever. How about we meet for coffee? Let's get your phones out and let's pick a time. And then you've got time to think about it and be prepared to finish that discussion or whatever it is.
Sure, you're a wise group leader.
And I agree with the time limits with off-campus groups as well, because I've had small groups, my own small groups, where people just wouldn't go home. And they, you know, I would go.
Because they love you.
I would get the kids. My wife's a lot nicer than I am. And so she would stand and talk to them, and I would go start getting the kids in bed and get into my pajamas, you know, and they're still there. They're not going home.
And you know why part of the reason for that is?
I'm a bad small group leader.
No, they don't want to go home because they can't stand each other. If you've got a couples group, there are people that the happiest time of their week is the hour or 2 hours they spend in their Sunday school class or their small group. And they feel they're at least around normalcy. They long for that, and they don't want to go home.
That's a good point.
Doesn't have anything to do with this podcast, but it was there.
That was some Francis wisdom for you there.
It happens. How about number three, greater missional freedom? Focus.
Well, I think that, you know, that goes to partly to inviting those unchurched friends and neighbors to your house. But also, you know, there's this more of a focus on the community, I think, when you can have an off-campus group. So if you're going to do something missionally out in your community, you know, working with an organization or just being out there to serve the community, it seems like it's an easier leap from an off-campus group that is actually meeting out in the community than it is for a group that gathers together at the church building, you know, on a Sunday morning. How do you take an on-campus group, David, and get them to be missional outside of that building?
I've told you before, and you've seen me talk about it, that the day that our new Sunday school class at our church became community was the Saturday that we went together. Most of us, almost everybody was there, went to Tennessee Baptist Children's Home and painted playground furniture and cleaned out a missionary residence and spread mulch, and then packed up I made an accidental contribution of a ladder to the home, and then we all got our stinky bodies in our cars and drove to Barbecuties Barbecue and sat around a table and laughed, and in our sweaty selves had a great time, and community was born that day. Not because we sat in a room at the church and experienced community, but because we experienced community out in the community serving together. I think you've just got to create excuses. You got to create reasons to do it. One of our worst days, it was actually a good day, it was community, is when we signed up to go have a fellowship time with the folks at a senior citizen center, you know, a nursing home. And they basically didn't want us there. They had enough people come by to visit with them that day. And so we sat in the lobby of a nursing home by ourselves and had a good conversation. So it doesn't always work. The community part of it worked, just because we intended to. It's just like You have to make it happen. In fact, you got to make parties happen. Fellowship activities don't just pop up organically. You got to plan them. You got to make them happen.
You have to be intentional, which is the same with off-campus groups. I mean, the hardest piece of getting off-campus groups to function biblically, I think, is being on mission. Because when you're sitting, whether you're sitting in a church building or you're sitting in somebody's living room, that's comfortable. You know, that's easy. It's going outside of that that is difficult. And so I think it's both sides. It's off campus, on campus. If you're not intentional with pushing out beyond those walls, it's just not going to happen.
And sometimes those activities happen within the community. Our group leader and his wife's house flooded. They live near a creek, and they can't sell the house because they're on a floodplain, and flooded during the last big rain we had in Nashville. And so we all showed up and pulled junk out of their garages and washed it off and went to Taco Bell. We have the tradition of going stinkily to some fast food place. And so we went to Taco Bell, had a great time. Those things create memories too, memories of service. And those are always really good.
And the last point that I have for being pro off-campus groups, and David, I'd love to hear you push back on this a little bit because I think you probably will, is that you can go a little bit deeper with your relationships when it's in an off-campus group. And what I mean by that is you're actually in somebody's home, so you're kind of seeing their mementos, their family pictures on the wall, you know, just kind of how they do life. And so you can kind of get into that conversation about your life and relationships and all a little bit quicker, I think, than you can in an on-campus group where you're in a sterile classroom and you have to spend a little bit more time getting there than you would if you just stepped into somebody's life at their home. What do you think about that, David? Is that true, or push back on it a little bit?
Well, I hadn't thought about the memorabilia and stuff like that. That's an excellent point. I suppose you would at least get to know the host family better, and that would probably stimulate conversations about similar types of art objects and stuff like that, travel objects. So that's an excellent point. I think that that going deeper in relationships might be more a function of whether or not the group's open or closed. And an open group is by nature, because it's got new people coming in and out every week, there's not going to be sufficient trust there for people to share real deep stuff, which they might do if it was the same people week after week after week after week, and they grew to trust and love and feel supported by those folks. And so I think you have a good point that the relationships are probably deeper. I'm not sure it's about location.
So for you, it's as much about just time and being closed.
And still having devices. You know, you talked about the collectible type things. You know, one of the things I advocate when a class pretends to be new again is that they wear name tags and put their first name really big on the top line, their last name on the next line, and then every week put something different on the third line, their hometown, where they were born, favorite sports team, favorite restaurant, favorite book, favorite movie, those kind of things. And so it's surprising how folks can get to know each other by what's just a little tidbit of information that springs usually into conversation later on in terms of connection, which accelerates the deepening of relationships, at least on superficial matters.
I love that with the name tags.
Okay, so just to reiterate, the cases for on-campus groups are easier to join, built-in childcare, more consistency, easier training. Cases for off-campus groups, easier to scale, which you went into, Chris, more transparency, greater missional focus, and deeper relationships. And we've seen in this discussion that there's some bleed from one to the other in some of these cases, that they both can apply, and a lot of it depends on just leadership and intentionality. But here's the question. Unscripted question, Chris and David.
Scary.
What about churches that want to do both? I know we've talked about it on the show.
Can't happen.
It's over. It stops. Thanks for joining us, guys. But what about side by side? Chris, I know in the article you point out, at least in a couple of instances, of churches doing it well. I have also seen, as I'm sure both of you have, not done so well. So what do you say to that?
I was kidding when I said it's not possible, because actually at the end of the article, I make a case for doing both. Now, I do think that it's difficult. It's probably easier if you're going to just do on campus or you're just going to do off campus. But I have seen examples of it working in both cases. One of the churches that I use is, you brought up Eddie Mosley earlier, Life Point Church. They do on campus and they do off campus. And they would probably tell you that they do one a little bit better than the other one. So I don't know that I could bring up a case of a church that says we are knocking it out of the park with on-campus and off-campus groups. But I think that there are cases where for some people, it makes more sense to be in an on-campus group. And maybe it's just where they are in life, you know, where they are with their responsibilities, but they have Sunday mornings and that makes sense. Where it makes sense for other people to be off-campus for a season, and that might switch, and that's okay. What do you think, David?
I like that last thought. The key question for me would be to clarify what you're trying to accomplish. So are we talking about, Brian, when you asked the question, I don't expect you to answer this, but just hypothetically, are we talking about doing one or the other, either on campus or off campus? Or are we? That's what you're nodding your head. Yes. There is another way about doing both and doing both on campus and off campus, which is a different dynamic. So if we're talking about the first one, doing either or, one or the other, the key to success is making them as much the same as possible. If you're calling them Sunday school and small groups, then figure out a name to call them the same thing. Call them connect groups, call them grow groups, call them life groups, call them community groups, call them something other than those two names, so that you can communicate to people, hey, if you're just coming to worship here, that's not gonna cut it. You're not gonna grow as a disciple. You're not gonna make friends. You need to be in a group. So you need to be in a community group, a Bible fellowship group. There's two ways to do that. You can either find a group on campus before or after worship on the weekend, or we offer several different places and locations during the week. We use similar curriculum. We're all kind of on the same page, or we have a similar format. As you would expect, the off-campus groups spend more time and occasionally take more breaks, but we try to do as much as possible. We do the same thing. We just do it at different places. What do you think?
I think that's very important, the consistency between the two, calling them the same thing. I think also the curriculum piece of it that we sometimes don't take as seriously as we should. I think you should have the same type of content. Now, on campus, you could probably have something that's more what we would call ongoing, where it kind of continues on with the same themes, whereas off campus, you could do more of a short term, but they need some type of content. And, you know, off-campus groups need the content. On-campus groups need the community. We can figure this out. We can all do this and call it the same thing. So I'm a big fan of calling the same thing and being consistent with as much as you can with the experience.
The key thing is folks need to be in a group. Wherever it happens, whenever it happens, they need to be in a group, because if they don't, the research is very clear. If they only come to a worship service, less than 20% of them are going to still be around in 5 years, and that's not good.
Where I've seen churches challenge with the side-by-sides, what I'm calling it, where you're a both-and, is if you have one, which is the case most of the time, so if you've been a traditionally on-campus church, and that's been one of your strengths, and you go to add off-campus groups, if you don't put some of these things in place, like what you... if you're not intentional about like curriculum and what you call them, and I've seen that mistake made. So, and I think we're talking about some of the same places, probably, David.
Yeah.
That's where it doesn't work so well. And so it needs to be, I think your point is so well put. It's about being in groups. And so we've got on-campus groups and we've got off-campus groups, but the group's a group. And so your curriculum choices, how you train the leaders, I think all of those things are real important, that they're consistent across all of the groups. Now, I don't, tell me if I'm wrong, but it seems like that's a mistake that's made quite often, is even internally within a given church, they tend to think in terms, oh, these guys are completely different over here than these guys, so we need to treat them differently.
Yeah, and there's other assumptions made, Brian, that is like all young adults want to be in a small group instead of a Sunday school class.
You mean off campus?
Yeah, off campus. So what I say? Small groups, yeah. I'm doing.
He's having
insane
flashbacks. Boxing glove flashbacks.
Anyway, there are more fundamental decisions than just that stuff. Because I totally forgot what I was going to say. Because you goofed around like that.
The largest group that is at the church that I'm working with right now is a young adult, and I'll just call it Sunday school class. It's the largest one. It's attracting the most new people. It's working, and it's millennials.
And who may, if they experienced it, if empty nesters and younger senior adults would experience the longer time you get to spend, the deeper relationships, all of the advantages, you could check them off for the off-campus groups, they would enjoy it so much. And free up space for that, for the kids and their parents. It might not be the people that you think who would like the different types of groups you would offer if you did both.
That's been the surprising discovery in my journey. And I would say that that's a case for side by side as well, because in the different life situations, like right out of college, I probably would like to be in a home. But when those children start coming, you get the obvious benefits of on campus. And then, like where Chris and I are, that era or season of life we're moving into, that empty nest, we're ready to go off campus again. So that's a case for both, is you're serving your membership well in the discipleship context by offering both on and off campus groups.
I'm ready to not clean my home every Thursday night.
Yeah, exactly.
I forgot to put that on here. That's the biggest benefit of on campus is you don't have to clean your house.
No, just don't. People don't care. Leave those dishes out. Be real. Don't we talk about authenticity in off campus groups? Cleaning the house. Chris Surratt, you are wasting your time.
We also talk about hospitality. Well, we won't go into that. That's the next podcast.
Yeah. And the gift of hospitality, by the way, since I'm going to be in the next spot, the mark of someone with the gift of hospitality is the person who loves to have people at their place and they don't worry about cleaning it up.
That's another episode. What if a non-hospitality is married to a hospitality type?
Don't host a small group.
Here's a question for you, and we're not going to answer because we're out of time, but is the gift of hospitality truly a spiritual gift?
Do you want an answer to that? Well, it takes a creative approach to that passage in 1 Peter. So
there you go.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for episode 50 of Group Answers, the first one in our new studio. Chris, David, appreciate all the insights. Chris, you want to tell everybody about our sponsor, smallgroup.com?
Our sponsor for this podcast is smallgroup.com. Smallgroup.com has over 3,000, get that, 3,000 customizable Bible studies that you can download. You can put your logo in, you can change the font, you can put your own colors. It's beautiful. And you can get all of that by just going to smallgroup.com and signing up for a 30-day free trial. You're not going to get that anywhere else. So check it out, smallgroup.com.
And David, because we know people like you don't really retire, we look forward to having you on this show even into the new year.
It would be a great privilege.
Thanks for being with us. Look forward to next time, episode 51.
Till then,
enjoy.